Amory and 107.5 FM W298 DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump weighing in on the Texas redistricting fight and the Democrats who have left Texas to stop a vote on it.
They've abandoned the state. Nobody's seen anything like it, even though they've done it twice before. And in a certain way, it almost looks like they've abandoned the state. It looks very bad.
The president demanded Texas redraw maps to pick up more Republican seats in the state. Texas Democrats say drawing maps mid-decade is unusual, unfair, and discriminatory. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is in Moscow days before the president's deadline for Russia to reach a peace deal with Ukraine or face further economic sanctions. It happens from time to time across Germany. This morning in Dresden, several neighborhoods and thousands of people from the city center have been asked to leave their homes and businesses as bomb experts set to defuse a World War II bomb on site, the evacuation zone nearly a half mile. Today marks 80 years since the U.S. dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima. This is ABC News.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. How much is Leo DiCaprio worth? In the neighborhood of $30 to $50 million, according to Warner Brothers and Michael Mann. Mann has a finished script for Heat 2, his follow-up to his 1995 film Heat. Attached so far are actors Austin Butler and Adam Driver. Mann's ideal budget is $200 million, which Warner Brothers balked at. Mann did a revised budget for $170 million, and Warner's told him they would like it to be even less expensive. Mann's solution, according to Hollywood Insider, is to sign Leonardo DiCaprio in hopes that it will get Warners to sign off on a higher budget. The original film was a hit and starred Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Val Kilmer, and Ashley Judd. The sequel will focus on tracking down Val Kilmer's character, who escaped in the first Heat. The film is not quite a lock to get made and is currently in the very early stages of pre-production. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Quay Walker is back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Green Bay, where the Packers finally have their middle linebacker, Quay Walker, back in action. The former first-round pick suffered an ankle injury last December against the Seahawks, but didn't have surgery until May.
I thought it was just a high ankle, so I thought it was just something that just was lingering on at the moment. And then I came back for OTAs and tried to do something. I just knew something wasn't feeling right. I didn't want it to, like, just to linger on throughout the season. So I was like, I think the smart idea, probably going to have surgery during OTAs and get it out the way.
Baseball. The Brewers beat the Braves again, this time 7-2. Nothing special, just walks, stealing bases, RBIs.
We pecked away and got it done, but they left a lot of guys on base. It's kind of a little bit nerve-wracking. Freddie made some big pitches at some big times. You know, he really did. Credit to him.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. The series wrapping up today in Atlanta with sports on Mike Clemens.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, political consultant Joseph Pecky will join us. We're also going to talk tariffs and so much more with Derek Van Ruden and wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11. As Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy, highs in the low 80s. Some showers and storms possible this afternoon. A few storms tonight, lows around 68. Scattered storm possible on Thursday, otherwise mostly sunny and 86. For Thursday night, partly cloudy and 69. Right now, it's 68.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
I guarantee you there's a market for people who want to watch a middle-aged guy change his clothes, do his dishes. People are so bored and will look at anything. So what I thought could be fun, and Conrad, I need your okay on this. I would never, you know, volunteer you for this, but you and I should both set up OnlyFans page and see who gets more followers.
I'm okay on that. I don't think
he's
I'll
blushing.
Sign.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome into the studio Northeast Wisconsin filmmaker Craig Kinnett and Northeast Wisconsin singer-songwriter DeAndre Marie performs live. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
Welcome to the Midwest Farm Report, everyone. I'm Ben Jarbo joining you this morning while the rest of the team is up in Bear Creek for the Farm Technology Days. It looks like the temperatures are going to start to creep up a bit, but with that, we will also see if we can get some rain in just a few minutes when Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck joins the show. With it being a Wednesday, Farm Director Pam Yonke has a conversation with our friends at the Steffes Group, and Randy Kath is giving a deeper dive into the work they do behind the scenes when preparing for an auction. While the team is up at the Farm Tech Days, they may have a chance to see drones in action. To give an inside look at what they can expect, I have a chat with Jeremy Williams, the owner of American Drone, to see what he has planned for the event. Also on the docket later in the hour, Stephanie Hoff talks with Kelly Wilford on how an expiring legislation may leave farmers needing to pay an increased death tax. Coming up next, David Geetbrock joins the show to give us a more detailed look into how the state works to stock fish in our lakes. We've got a lot to cover today, so don't touch that dial.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers.
Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you...
Dropping in to check on your crop, Bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Rising energy costs impacting your farm's profits?
Focus on Energy is here to help with increased incentives for energy-efficient upgrades in 2025. Save money and energy for years to come.
Take the first step toward lowering utility bills. Call 800-762-7077 or visit focusonenergy.com/agribusiness today.
That's focusonenergy.com/agribusiness. Focus on Energy, proudly supporting Wisconsin farmers since 2001.
Hey, got yield? The Wisconsin Soybean Association is excited to announce the 2025 Wisconsin Soybean Yield Contest. Highlighting the innovative production practices of Wisconsin soybean growers, the Yield Contest celebrates soybean growers across the state and their dedication to improving their operations. Two winners will be selected from four geographical divisions, with additional awards available. Entry forms must be postmarked by August 31st, so don't wait. For more information, visit wisoybean.org.
When the state is in the summer lull, fishing is one of Wisconsin's favorite pastimes, and it even brings out many out-of-staters for its reputation of having great fisheries. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, I'm Ben Jarbo, and Dave Geetbrock, a fish culture section leader with the DNR, is here to share some further insight into what the process looks like for fish stocking that helps make sure Wisconsin is kept as one of the best fisheries in the U.S.
So we're stocking fish throughout the entire state of Wisconsin, from Lake Superior all the way down to the counties like Rock and Green County down here, supporting all kinds of different fisheries across the state. We start with walleyes and muskies, of course. We stock trout and trout species across the state. We're looking to support different types of anglers as well, so musky fishermen, walleye fishermen, we support urban fisheries in the urban areas by creating an opportunity with those folks. We also support the Lake Michigan fishery by stocking trout and salmon there. Chinook salmon are largest in number of fish, 1.3 million Chinooks this past year. Support that big salmon fishery that everybody's loving right now, by the way, that's pretty hot right now. If you're a fisherman and you're getting reels on your social media, you're seeing all kinds of Chinook salmon coming in all over the place. We also support fisheries up in Lake Superior with brown trout and lake trout support. And, of course, you know, muskies in Green Bay, which is really hot. Also, again, muskies and walleyes across the north.
Yeah, and you're mentioning all these different species. You do stock in that. You do urban places as well. How do you prepare the fish? Like here in Madison, there's some water quality issues. Is there a certain way you have to, I guess, breed these fish in order to be able to live in this water?
Well, we select fish specifically for certain water bodies. And so we use fish that are most appropriate for those locations. And also we don't always have an expectation that they're going to survive all the way through or all year long either. When we're stocking trout in these locations in the urban centers, our expectation is that they're caught, used, and then, you know, they're probably not going to persist in those areas. Other locations, we're not specifically breeding something specific, but we're using wild genetics, and we do that all over the place for our fisheries. So we stock muskies native to the north. We stock muskies that are native to Green Bay and the northeast part of the state. We also stock walleyes the same. We have the Rock River Basin the Rock River Basin walleyes. We stock those fish from that area because they're locally adapted. And that's the case for all of our native species. Chinook, obviously they're not native, so we're not necessarily specifically looking for certain fish. Same thing with brown trout. Brown trout are not a native stock, so we use what's available and what survives and does well. Things like sturgeon, we are very specific about those fish when we stock sturgeon. We only stock fish back into the their native water. So we'll go to the Wisconsin River, we'll spawn native stock there and bring them. When we're doing stocking, we put them back only in that basin. Same thing with fish from Lake Winnebago. We stock just downstream of appropriate locations because genetics matters.
When you are looking at stocking, and especially for different species, different locations, how do you decide how many, like what's that process look like, how many to put into a specific place?
Sure. So that's a great question, and it's always based in science. If you look at Wisconsin's laws and how we're governed, it really says that you will stock fish based on scientific principles. And so what that means is we use a survey. We go out and survey a body of water, determine a population, and then we develop the idea whether we need to stock that population to support a fishery or not. So we'll go out, look at a population in a body of water, look at habitat, water quality, those kinds of things. And if the population of a specific species isn't there, but could be and could be supported, then we'll work to stock that population up and then create the fishery for our constituents. And so it really is based in science. We look at what's there. We develop a scenario where we can get that population to where it should be. And then hopefully we're not having to have to stock all the time. There are certain fisheries we're going to always probably stock, like the Lake Michigan fishery, where the salmonids don't necessarily return and reproduce naturally. But one of the goals is, in a lot of the better systems, is to stock fish, but then regulate as well so that those species persist on their own.
After you stock, how long till these fish are good size to be able to catch? How long does it take for them to grow? I know it probably depends on the species, but in general.
Sure. So to get to a good size, for instance, muskies, you might be 5 years before you're really catching a really good sized fish. You know, it's all about maturity and size by the species. Also depends on available forage and space, of course. But, you know, walleyes, three to 4 years before you're getting a really good sized fish that somebody's going to really want to keep. Trout, we stock trout at full size and at a catchable legal size. So their trout are all over the board that way, but at least 18 months to 2 years of course, for those trout species. And, of course, the salmon out in Lake Michigan, it's a good 2.5-3 years before we're catching all of those fish at what we want them to be at.
Well, and you're saying earlier that there's, 1.3 million Chinook salmon released. And obviously, there's tons of other species that are raised here. How many fisheries are in this state? Like, how many does it take to be able to keep all these lakes in the state stocked and ready for these anglers to get out there?
So most of the fisheries in the state of Wisconsin actually aren't stocked. So the good news is that Mother Nature does a lot of this work for us. In fact, the vast majority of the work that needs to get done to have a fishery out there. So stocking is just one of the many tools that fisheries managers use to produce and fisheries for people out there. And it's not, you really should not think that if the stocking truck hasn't shown up, there's not going to be a fishery there. In fact, sometimes those even better fisheries like walleye in Lake Winnebago, Lake Winnebago is not a stocked walleye population, yet it's one of the best places to go for walleyes in the state. So it really, stocking is just a great tool to supplement a lot of the things that our anglers want. It's a great tool to rehabilitate and reintroduce things that have gone wrong. But it's also, something that some anglers depending on what their access is, like an urban trout stocking situation. So stocking is a great tool. It's wonderful to use in certain specific areas, but it's not the only tool that produces a fishery. In fact, a lot of great fisheries are out there that have no stocking at all.
What's the most stocked fish that you had for this year? Because if I remember looking at the form, it kind of changes every year on how many and what species are being stocked.
Yeah, we stock a lot of different numbers over the years, and sometimes it depends on what's available, what's asked of the hatchery staff, what we have a surplus on. I mean, these are wild animals, so we take a lot of take animal out, make a lot of little fish. They don't all survive, and they're all lots of uncontrollable variables, obviously, in that. So sometimes we have more than we need or more than we thought we needed, and sometimes we don't have nearly enough as what we were hoping to get. So that kind of varies. And so, Chinook salmon, pretty normal to be about 1.3 million, but then walleye numbers could be up or down. For instance, last year, I believe it was 1.2 million from our press release, about 1.2 million walleyes. And that kind of depends on how well those fish take when we start rearing them. Once the fish spawn, we don't get a second chance. And so we can't flip another switch and quote, get some more kind of thing. So it's usually a one-shot deal. And so we work hard to make sure that we get what we need. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
As Geet Brock was saying, it is always based on science when it comes to fish stocking. He would also like to thank the fishermen for making sure the fisheries stay clean for what they do stock. From the southern end of the world's longest barn, I'm Ben Jarbo.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as Ag Meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. A legal challenge against the Line 5 oil pipeline is set to begin August 12th in Ashland. Canadian oil giant Enbridge wants to trench and blast across northern Wisconsin to make way for a new 41-mile section of the pipeline. Environmental groups and the Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa are challenging permits and other approvals for the project issued by the DNR. Environmental groups across Wisconsin are calling on the state's congressional representatives not to support a bill that would weaken the Clean Water Act. The so-called Permit Act would, among other harms, allow polluters to release PFAS forever chemicals into waterways without telling state officials, allow massive amounts of pesticides to be released into waterways, and fast-track projects that destroy wetlands and streams. For a deep dive into Wisconsin's most pressing environmental issues, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go, Brewers!
You can go to the Brewers.
Wait, Todd, what?
It's Free Ticket Friday, Terry. A chance to win a four-pack of Brewers tickets several times every Friday. Great seats, by the way.
Okay, so download the free Civic Media app, find your local station, and listen for the keyword. Then text it through the app for your chance to win in this statewide contest.
Free Ticket Friday. On your local Civic Media radio station and the app. The Todd Allbaugh Show.
NFL Hall of Famer, College Football Hall of Famer, Mr. Joe Thomas. You were telling us a little bit about being drafted number 3. You skipped the draft.
I went fishing that day, and I never did it for anything other than I just much rather spend the day fishing with my dad, and I'm hoping that that's a story that keeps being told and gives people a reason. Like, you know what, instead of working today, I'm going to go fishing with my kid. I'm going to make the time because it's impactful. It's memories that they're going to remember for the rest of their life.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4 on your local Civic Media radio station, and on the app. Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK. Todd Allbaugh.
Hey, everybody. Are you a little frustrated with how voting is going in Wisconsin? Well, tomorrow we'll talk about a possible solution called fusion voting. Join us live on location from La Crosse for Leader Ethics and Fusion Voting.
The Todd Allbaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Eastern Wisconsin. Let's just start at the south. Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee, and up through southern Wisconsin, Fond du Lac, Beaver Dam, up into Washera County, and Stevens Point, Marshfield, Wausau, up to Rhinelander, and everywhere east under that air quality advisory till noon. Still a lot of smoke. As winds become more southerly in the next day or so, we'll start to clear some of that out. But low pressure is also trying to build up out of the west today. A warm front's been pulled up into western Minnesota. There are showers and thunderstorms out near Sioux City in far western Iowa. Rain extending north into south central, up into east central Minnesota, just starting to push toward the Twin Cities and way up in the far northeast. Now, that rain isn't going to march right east. I still expect a smoky but warm day today. Fair amount of sunshine anywhere in Wisconsin. It's in the west. I'd say Eau Claire up to Park Falls, Hayward. There may be a bit of a rain chance by later this afternoon. More likely than rain starts pushing into western Wisconsin tonight, crossing through the state into the day tomorrow. I'd say the last rain we talk about is going to be very early Friday in more far southeast or east central Wisconsin. We'll dry it out after that. How much rain? A couple of tenths, maybe up to a half inch. There may be some thunderstorms providing more localized amounts, but overall, I don't expect a whole lot of rain out of this, but it's going to be ushering in with warm air. Those temps by Friday and Saturday, upper 80s and low 90s. We'll check that forecast right after this.
Join the Midwest Farm Report on Wednesday, August 6th at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. Starting at 9 a.m., visit us at the Rank Seeds booth, number 616, near the food court, for a special hat exchange. Bring your hat and stop by to say hello and get a new hat. Tell them the farm team sent you.
We'll also be broadcasting at 11:30 a.m. in booth 669 on Central Avenue with Rural Mutual Insurance. Learn how the number one farm insurer is keeping Wisconsin strong with premiums paid here that stay here. Learn more at ruralmutual.com.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Rural Mutual is the number one farm insurer in Wisconsin for a good reason. As a company founded by farmers, they understand the ag industry and its challenges. Local agents offer farm families the best advice and personalized coverage. Visit ruralmutual.com to find an agent near you.
Rural Mutual Insurance, keeping Wisconsin strong.
Well, Stu, are we going to be getting enough rain for this critical growing period here?
Well, I don't know if that quarter or maybe half inch is enough for some, but at least it's something. I'm going to talk about that air quality advisory yet for a good part of northeast and eastern Wisconsin today. Some morning fog and haze and that smoke around will become sunny today, and I expect a lot of low to mid-80s for highs as winds become south a bit later, about 5. That rain chance in the far west late today. Some scattered showers moving in from western Wisconsin tonight. Partly cloudy otherwise, still mid and upper 60s overnight. And then Thursday is that day. A chance for a scattered shower, could be an isolated thunderstorm, not a major system really pushing a lot of rain in, but still in the low to mid 80s for highs, some upper 80s in the west. And then with sunshine, Ben, by Friday, and we're talking upper 80s, about 90, and staying that way for Saturday. Keep your fingers crossed for rain late in the weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to hope we get enough rain for our farmers here in the next coming days as we move through a critical growing time. Well, that's your Compeer Financial Ag Weather Update. Compeer Financial is your financial partner committed to agriculture in rural America. Visit CompeerFinancial.com.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of the Todd Alba Show, where he's joined by James Small.
Happy and proud and honored to have James Small, the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. James, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me on today.
Let's talk a little bit about this workforce more, because you're much more versed in this than I am. I know a few years back, a good friend of mine, Troy Everson, which was integral in the Viroqua and Vernon County EMS and EMT system. He now does that down in Burlington, Wisconsin. And I know he helped get through a piece of legislation years ago where high school students that were taking courses to be volunteers were allowed to actually help and actually do some of the stuff as long as they were with a licensed person on the team. And that really opened up and not just created more workforce, but also was almost like an apprentice type of training. Have you seen that have an effect?
Yes. You're seeing in a number of different regions around the state, the technical colleges are running what they call a dual enrollment program, where high school seniors will come in and learn a trade. And one of those programs might be fire and EMS. There's been a high demand for that. I've seen the technical college systems be very successful with that. There's also some high schools that have partnered with other training centers to offer EMT training right in the schools.
Wow.
And La Follette School of Public Policy just did an EMS-related report that came out in the last couple of weeks, and one of their key recommendations was expansion of the high school EMS programs to provide somebody access to a workforce, because those kids that are going through those programs right now are going to find a job pretty quickly after coming out of it.
And good paying with good benefits generally.
Yes. Yep. This is going to be a job that probably has a living wage with good benefits working for a government right out of high school, potentially in some cases.
Yeah.
And then continue on with further training like paramedic training and so on. But it's I think that's one tool that we need to look at. But just access to training in general. You know, when we did our ambulance reliability study a couple of years ago, one of the things that we found is about 13% of the services had an hour or more drive to a training center. Well, that's a huge barrier. If you're depending on volunteers to come in and they're going to work their regular job all day, drive an hour to training, spend 4 hours in training, drive an hour home, and then go back to their job the next day, their real job, and then they're going to do that 50 times. And that's a lot to ask of somebody who wants to come in and volunteer. So finding other access points is going to be, or alternative ways to delivering that training is something we need to do.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. President Trump weighing in on the Texas redistricting fight and the Democrats who have left Texas to stop a vote on it.
They've abandoned the state. Nobody's seen anything like it, even though they've done it twice before. And in a certain way, it almost looks like they've abandoned the state. It looks very bad.
The president demanded Texas redraw maps to pick up more Republican seats in the state. Texas Democrats say drawing maps mid-decade is unusual, unfair, and discriminatory. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff is in Moscow days before the president's deadline for Russia to reach a peace deal with Ukraine or face further economic sanctions. It happens from time to time across Germany. This morning in Dresden, several neighborhoods and thousands of people from the city center have been asked to leave their homes and businesses as bomb experts set to defuse a World War II bomb on site, the evacuation zone nearly a half mile. Today marks 80 years since the U.S. dropped an atomic bomb on Hiroshima. This is ABC News.
Quay Walker is back. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Green Bay, where the Packers finally have their middle linebacker, Quay Walker, back in action. The former first-round pick suffered an ankle injury last December against the Seahawks, but didn't have surgery until May.
I thought it was just a high ankle, so I thought it was just something that just was lingering on at the moment. And then I came back for OTAs and tried to do something. I just knew something wasn't feeling right. I didn't want it to, like, just to linger on throughout the season. So I was like, I think the smart idea, probably going to have surgery during OTAs and get it out of the way.
Baseball. The Brewers beat the Braves again, this time 7-2. Nothing special, just walks, stealing bases, RBIs.
We pecked away and got it done, but they left a lot of guys on base. It's kind of a little bit nerve-wracking. Freddie made some big pitches at some big times. You know, he really did. Credit to him.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy. The series wrapping up today in Atlanta with Sports on Mike Clemens.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Wednesday, Melissa Baldoff has our climate check, along with a guest from Wisconsin Conservation Voters on President Trump's denial of basic science.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9. As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. For today, mostly cloudy, highs in the low 80s. Some showers and storms possible this afternoon. A few storms tonight, lows around 68. Scattered storm possible on Thursday, otherwise mostly sunny and 86. For Thursday night, partly cloudy and 69. Currently 66 degrees.
Matt Nair on air.
I have a baby bird stuck in a birdhouse.
Its head is stuck.
Terry on the text line says, if you can detach the birdhouse, bring it to Ace Hardware, they can help get the bird out?
Really? Richard from Waukesha, you get the last word on this.
I like the idea of the Ace Hardware.
Yep.
But some advice is don't let them talk you into a remodeled bathroom.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, where he's joined by Hans Breitenmauser.
There were at least a couple of rural sheriffs that were passing emails back and forth about not necessarily cooperating any further with ICE, seeing how things were being handled. And really, Hans, I mean, it's about going after brown people first and foremost.
Yes.
But in Trump's case, he's like, well, as long as we're going after brown people in the blue areas, the white people in the red areas who need the brown people to make money are going to be okay. That sums up Donald Trump in a nutshell.
Well, I think you're right. Unfortunately, I think that's kind of where we're at. And obviously, all these things are more complicated than we'd like them to be. But that's reality. That's what it means to be a grown-up. Things are complicated sometimes. And what I can say is that the dairy industry falls completely apart in the state of Wisconsin without foreign-born employees. We need a mechanism by which we can have people from other countries coming in and doing jobs in this country. Otherwise, the economy just doesn't work. Any economist worth their salt will tell you that. This isn't, economics needing a PhD. This is simple math. And so anybody that can't see past the idea that we're simply demonizing a group of people and scapegoating them, they're simply kidding themselves. And I'm willing to forgive people for that, but I have a hard time forgiving policymakers for that, because by God, they should know better.
Yeah, my response to that is when it comes to racial politics and Donald Trump and the MAGA wing, sometimes things really are as simple as they might seem. But that's that's my whole two cents on it. I got just over a minute left and wanted to ask you in general about June Dairy Month. There have been activities that are going on. And I always worry that as the years go by and as more of these factory farms come in and people start taking things for granted, do you still feel like all these June Dairy Month activities, they make a dent, they help folks around Wisconsin appreciate what's going on, or are you more concerned that maybe it's not, you know, what it used to be?
Well, I don't think it's what it's used to be. You know, it's hard not to be nostalgic for the days when there were 13 dairy farms on my road, and now there's only three of us left. The dairy industry has changed a great deal, but I do feel like the June dairy events are well received and well attended, and they go to some very nice farms, some large and some small, and it does help the public appreciate, you know, what the dairy industry contributes to the state economy, and helps educate non-farmers on what happens on real farms. And I getting back to the earlier conversation, I hope that as we go forward, part of that conversation is the fact that there's brown people that work on those farms as well.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
70 AM The Zone.
Welcome back to the Midwest Farm Report, everyone. I'm Ben Jarboe along with you on this Wednesday morning. And if you've been listening, you might realize that I do a little fishing report during this show. But if we take a look at today, I think these fish are going to be moving, and you're going to have to try to use multiple different types of tactics. Go slow with wacky rig when the sun gets up there in the afternoon, but in the mornings and the evenings, I would be going for some moving baits. I'd be throwing some crankbaits. I mean, that includes lipless crankbaits. I would go with jerk bait, you know, even a frog over in the weeds. I'd be aiming for weed lines. I'd be going under docks. I would be going to those drop-offs, those ledges, because I think that's where those smallmouth are going to be hanging, patrolling the area, waiting for something to cross their path. So if you make it out there, good luck. I hope you slam some big old fish. Well, moving forward here, Stephanie Hoff is joined by Kelly Wilford to tell us a bit more about how an outgoing legislation might make a higher death tax.
The estate tax, otherwise known as the death tax, kicks in when assets get passed on. It can have big implications for family farms or small businesses trying to stay afloat for the next generation. Farm law outreach specialist Kelly Wilford joins us from the Division of Extension. She breaks down how the tax works and why agriculture groups have been championing the tax adjustment that Congress made in the new federal budget.
For most folks, estate and gift tax is really a scary idea, right? You hear that terrifying 40% tax rate and go, oh my gosh, I'm going to lose the farm if I don't do some planning. But I'm going to back us off just one step, because that's a little bit of a misconception. What I really want us to think about is, what is that number? What does that mean? Stephanie, you're probably familiar with the idea of like a standard deduction when you do your income taxes, right?
Sure.
So your standard deduction is you have all your income for the year, and then essentially the federal government says, hey, here are X number of dollars that we're going to exempt. We just don't tax this bottom chunk of money. The same sort of thing is true with estate taxes. So each individual and I'm going to use 2025 since that's where we're at right now, each individual has a $13.99 million estate and gift tax credit, meaning you can pass $13.99 million of assets on when you pass away or with lifetime transfers, but collectively you can pass that much on before any estate tax is ever due. Now, if you're married, both you and your spouse have that exemption. USDA, their economic research service, actually did some research on this. And with that exemption, it's only about 1.1% of farm households that would pay estate tax if they hadn't done any estate planning. Now, what happened was the legislation that set that limit back in 2018 was set to expire as we go into 2026. So that exemption was going to go back down to about $7 million per person, or, you know, again, about $14 million per married couple that they could pass on. Well, that increases it to being almost 4% of farm households that would have some estate tax owed if they hadn't done any estate planning. But what we saw here in this reconciliation package, this one big, beautiful bill that's been passed into law, is that they have increased that exemption again to $15 million per person, which again, since we can work together with our spouse, if you're married, that puts you at that $30 million, 30, that of assets that you can pass on.
So Kelly, then remind us why that's important for farm families.
So this is really a big deal for farm succession and estate planning, because with the really inflated values of farmland today, we see these really high net worth operations who would potentially be facing some estate tax on, again, only the dollars over that amount. So it's not, hey, we've got $30 million and $1, so we're going to tax all of it. We just tax that $1. But again, we're not then looking for those liquid cash accounts to have to pay for these inflated values if the farmland is passing through the estate.
Well, and thank you for explaining that, because yes, equipment has gotten larger and more expensive. Land values continue to rise. So it's not like it's a big bag of cash that's getting passed on from one family to the next.
Yeah, exactly. And so it is really an important part when we're talking about farm succession to know how is that estate tax going to impact us. And, you know, certainly looking at this increased $15 million exemption per person, I think it's safe to say it's going to be less than that 1.1% of farm households that are going to owe estate tax if they do nothing at all. That being said, that doesn't mean that we don't still want to see farms doing some succession and estate planning to help transfer these operations to the next generation. We're still dealing with things like intestate succession and probate and long-term care planning. So just because an individual farm may not be over that, we'll say, net worth amount that's going to trigger an estate tax, doesn't mean that we don't still need to do some estate planning.
Kelly Wilfert joining us. She's a farm law outreach specialist with the Division of Extension, updating us on the changes made to the estate tax, otherwise known as the death tax or gift tax. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
Thank you for that, Stephanie. And make sure to stick around, because coming up next, we hear what you may be able to see at the Farm Technology Days when it comes to drone demonstrations, and we take a look at the markets.
Bavaria sausage is so much more than just award-winning brats. Fabulous farm babe Pam Yonke can attest to it. They've got all kinds of fantastic food, both online and in their store location, corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg, open Monday through Friday, 9 until 7, Saturday, 9 until 1. Did you know that if you stop by Bavaria Sausage, you can pick up not only those award-winning brats for your grill, but also restaurant-quality cooking essentials like burgers, chicken, pork chops, and steak. They want your event to be fabulous, and they've got it all ready to go. As always, you can check out their website, BavariaSausage.com. Have goods delivered directly to you, or if you're in the area, stop on by. Corner of Nesbitt Road, Fitchrona Road in Fitchburg, open Monday through Friday, 9 until 7, Saturday, 9 until 1. And don't forget, every Friday, rain or shine, they've got their fabulous brat fry. Follow them on Facebook to know exactly what flavor they're serving up. Bavaria Sausage.
At Channel, we always show up for our farmers. Is that tar spot or rust?
Incoming!
Definitely rust.
Rick, how did you... Dropping in to check on your crop bill. Let's call your agronomist before that rust can hurt your yield.
That sounds great, but when did you learn to skydive?
Self-taught, Bill. Kind of a prodigy.
From personalized insights to year-round support, Channel Seed Pros always show up. Visit channel.com to learn more. Channel, all in, all season. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Ben Jarbo with the Midwest Farm Report. Now let's take a look into what people can expect to see at the Farm Technology Days when it comes to drones. Jeremy Williams, the owner of American Drone, is here to share some insight on what he will have for everybody in attendance.
Yeah, we're excited to be out here at Clinton Farms here at Media Day. We plan on being a large presence at the show, answering everybody's questions, showing them the latest drone technology. It's going to be a fun 3 days.
And when you mentioned latest drone technology, what are some of these things that the people, the attendees, can look forward to learning about the drones and some of the, I guess, new aspects of what they can be used for?
Yeah, that's a great question. So what folks are going to be able to see is the brand new T-60X spraying and spreading drone. This is hot off the press. It only got approved by the Federal Aviation Administration about 3 weeks ago. So this drone carries almost 16 gallons of liquid going 30 miles an hour. Every model that comes out is bigger and faster, and this is the latest and greatest one.
How long can it go? How many acres can it cover with the 16 gallons of liquid on it?
Yeah, another great question. So it depends on the rate that you're going to spray at. Typical rates are about 2 gallons per acre. So if we're carrying close to 16 gallons, you know, you're looking at 7 to 8 acres in about 6.5 minutes.
Well, now I'll save some of those questions for the people that attend, leave them a little hanging here. For those that do attend and they want to see the drone in action, how often will you be doing these demonstrations at the Farm Tech Days?
Yeah, so we're going to be doing demonstrations all 3 days at certain intervals. That'll be in the literature for the show. People will be able to see when the demos are going to be, and it'll be fun.
And where are these demos going to be? Is it going to be just on one field, or is it going to be something where they have to look in that because it's going to be changing throughout the whole week?
Yeah, I think it may not be solidified quite yet, but again, I think the show maps will clearly show, you know, where the demo areas will be. You can also visit us on our Facebook page. We'll have all that information for people to find out.
Make sure to grab your program when you are in attendance at the Farm Technology Days, because these drone demonstrations are showing you the future of agriculture. Now let's take a look at how the markets are moving this morning. Grain is a bit of a mix, with cash corn down 1.5 cents at $3.80 and new crop corn down 1.25 at $4.75. Cash soybeans are up 2 cents at $9.73.5, and new crop soybeans are up 2.25 at $9.93. September wheat is down 0.25 at $5.08. Class 3 milk contracts are pushing higher, with September contracts up 17 cents at $18.54 a hundredweight, and October contracts up 16 cents at $18.58 a hundredweight. On the close from Chicago Tuesday, 40-pound blocks were up 2.25 cents at $1.80 and a quarter, but butter closed down 2.25 at $2.44. Make sure to stay tuned in, because coming up next, Pam Yonke talks with our friends at the Cephas Group.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Yonke.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. You may think racial gerrymandering happened long ago and just in southern states with legacies of suppressing African Americans. Think again. Anti-voter legislatures around the country still employ racial gerrymandering to retain political power. In addition to recent racial gerrymandering cases involving African Americans in Alabama, Louisiana, Florida, South Carolina, Texas, and Arkansas, there have been multiple racial gerrymandering complaints from Native Americans in North Dakota and Hispanic Americans in Washington State and Texas. To provide equity and representation, the Voting Rights Act Section 2 allows districts of dense populations of minority voters to choose the candidate of their choice, but elected officials continue to evade those rules. South Carolina's legislature split Charleston by moving 30,000 residents from 11 of 12 of the highest concentrations of black voters into another district. In the words of the lower court, bleaching Congressional District 1. Louisiana's population is almost 33% black, but Louisiana's legislature defiantly drew only one of its 6 congressional districts as a majority-minority black district, diluting the rest of their vote. A county in North Dakota elected its commissioners at large to reduce the chance of a Native American candidate being elected. Tomorrow, we'll tell you how some states prohibit gerrymandering and create fair maps. I'm Brian Beal.
front seat. Just this one time. Please, please, please.
No, not yet.
But why?
Because I love you, and you're just not ready yet. Now, get in the back so I can get you in your car seat, please.
Putting your kids in the right seat for their age and size is an act of love. Check that your kids are in the right seat at NHTSA.gov/the right seat. Love protects. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, political consultant Joseph Heckey will join us. We're also going to talk tariffs and so much more with Derek Van Ruden and wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK. Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Staff to meet with you on your potential auction, 800-726-8609. 8609. That's 800-726-8609. They still do business over the kitchen table, so do use that number. Randy Kathback along with us. We'll see him a little later today at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days in Clinton Farms in Bear Creek. The Steffes staff rotating chairs. You got quite a few things going on, those, Randy, so I won't be surprised if I don't bump into you. Tell folks you got a couple different irons in the fire that we might want to follow through on for the rest of August.
Absolutely. You know, and that's one thing about our website. Every time you go there, it seems like there's something added. It's going to be an incredibly busy summer, incredibly busy fall. A lot of things added daily on the website. A couple highlights coming that might be relevant to the situation here. We've got a standalone manure auction coming in August 26th. That's our biannual manure sale. So we handle any type of manure handling, injection equipment, pumping equipment, storage equipment, anything to do with that. We are actively getting consignments. We do a lot of dealer participation on that sale as well. But that's the nice thing about an auction. We need both buyers and sellers. So if you've got excess manure equipment that you'd be considering to sell with us, give us a holler. And also if you're in the need for anything manure related, we've got that as well coming. Also, a little unique opportunity in South Central Minnesota on August 19th. We've got a small dairy, about 150 cow dairy, with a parlor freestyle setup, house on site, grain handling on site, feed storage on site. Just a real cute little 40 acre facility with some other land available. Incredibly well kept up. The family decided to move to Mississippi, and they've already bought a place down there, and we're moving. Just a really user-friendly, incredibly efficient little dairy. Milk cows there for a long time, and we kept incredible maintenance on the place. It is absolutely turnkey. A guy could be in there and milking cows tomorrow.
Oh, man. Somebody, you know that's somebody's wish list right there, the way you described it, Randy. I appreciate that. And again, like we said, if folks want to talk to the Steffes staff, learn a little bit more about how you conduct business, a lot of people never go through this process, maybe once in a lifetime. So I'm sure that at Wisconsin Farm Technology Day, if they want to lean on a table and get schooled a little bit, your staff is ready to help them there too.
Absolutely, and you hit the nail on the head. It's something that most people only go through once, maybe twice in a lifetime. We do it every day, and sometimes several times a day. So absolutely, you know, bend our ear and give us your thoughts, any type of questions. Nothing's off the table. If you do not want to necessarily be seen talking to an auctioneer at the Farm Tech Show, we completely understand that. Simply drop a line, say hi. We'll come to you. Absolute confidentiality on any type of consultation, and of course there's no charge for any of that initial viewing. We're willing to work for you, and bottom line, we're going to do what's right.
Yeah, well, and the other thing, you guys are great fiduciaries. If I've got, let's say we're doing an estate something, or I need to find the value out of this kind of thing, or, you know, spitball me what this lot looks like, you guys are good at, I say consultants. You've got probably a different phrase for it.
Consultants, I just simply like to say problem solver, but yeah. Ultimately, yes, we appraise everything we sell. So everything that comes across our sales, we put a number on it, not only from the standpoint of being keen to the market, and of course, in today's world, it's pretty vital to be on top of the market, and the fact that we are actively selling large amounts of equipment and real estate on a daily basis, we can ultimately see and feel swings in the market as they're happening, which becomes pretty vital, especially when it comes to seller expectation. And of course, in a somewhat down market, which we're in, managing seller expectation is probably one of the most difficult parts of the job. But ultimately, we're full disclosure and full transparency. We're not going to tell you something just to book a sale. We're going to tell you face-to-face, look you in the eye, and tell you honestly what we feel, what we believe.
Yep.
And ultimately, it's your decision from there, but we're going to tell you the truth.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, folks. These guys, I've worked with them how many years now, and I've seen it when they are working with clients, and I've heard it from clients after the sale. Randy Kath along with us. Are you intrigued? Then check out the website, steffesgroup.com, steffesgroup.com. Call them, 800-726-8609. That's 800-726-8609. Or you can be like me and join us at Wisconsin Farm Technology Days. Clinton Farms in Bear Creek, Wisconsin, hosting you on this day number two. The Steffes Group will be in the agribusiness tent. Take a look at the directory when you arrive and stop by. Steffesgroup.com. That's Randy Kath along with us from the Steffes Group.
From the Midwest Farm Report team, we thank you for coming along with us this morning. And from me, I look forward to talking to you tomorrow morning. Signing off from the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Ben Jarbo.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Is there some secret to making a dairy farm work? Find out today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community, and while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. With so many things out of their control, how do dairy farmers maximize their potential to succeed? Perhaps we should start with a definition of a successful dairy farmer. University of Minnesota Extension educator Jim Sulfur is in the Dairy Regional Office in St. Cloud.
Probably changes, and it probably is really variable from farm to farm. A lot of that really should be based on the farmer's goals. You can almost kind of lump them into two broad categories, kind of big picture items, business items, and then there's obviously you need to have a lot of good, successful production skills.
And you probably didn't see this coming, but Sulfur also factors in what he calls an attitude of gratitude.
They're so gracious. If I come out, they'll be thankful. They'll thank the agribusiness people that are out there as we meet. And they're also very thankful for the customers that they have. Most of these successful farmers really have pretty flexible business plans, and they think about long and short range goals. So they tend to try to be as nimble as they can. And that's forward looking.
Sulfur says meeting annually with trusted advisors to evaluate the farm's business plan for the coming year is also useful. And he says good dairy farmers keep good records, make being organized a priority, and they're proactive about getting work done on time. That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
P. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome into the studio Northeast Wisconsin filmmaker Craig Kinnett, and Northeast Wisconsin singer-songwriter DeAndre Marie performs live. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
My name is DeMar Hamlin. I play for the Buffalo Bills, and I play safety.
CPR saved my life. I've teamed up with the American Heart Association as a national ambassador to help create a nation of lifesavers, turning bystanders into lifesavers through CPR education and access to AEDs. Nearly 3 out of 4 cardiac arrests that don't happen in hospitals happen in homes. Join me to ensure everyone has the chance to live longer, healthier lives. Visit heart.org/nation.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. The House Oversight Committee subpoenaing the Justice Department for more files in the Jeffrey Epstein case. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche also weighing whether to release transcripts from his conversation with convicted sex trafficker Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's close confidant. High-level talks happening at the Kremlin on ending the war in Ukraine. ABC's Guy Davies has more from the Foreign Desk.
U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff has met with Russian President Vladimir Putin this morning. The pair was seen smiling and shaking hands. This is Witkoff's fifth visit to the Kremlin as the U.S. tries to secure a ceasefire in Ukraine. This Friday marks the deadline President Trump has set for Russia to end the war, threatening secondary tariffs and possible sanctions if Russia does not comply.
The Health and Human Services Department is canceling contracts and pulling funding for vaccines that are developed for respiratory illnesses like COVID and the flu. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a longtime vaccine skeptic, says vaccines that use mRNA technology will be halted. This is ABC News.
As was